Okay, calling the meeting to order.
Wet.
Okay, the Board of Retirement welcomes you to its meeting, which is regularly held on the second Wednesday and the fourth Tuesday of each month. Your interest is encouraged and appreciated. Consent items. These matters include routine administrative actions and are identified under the consent items. Public comment. Any member of the public may speak on any item which is on the agenda. The board will only allow comments by members of the public on any item on the agenda during consideration of the item. When the item is called, please raise your hand and the chair will recognize you or you submit one of the papers. The general public at the beginning of the regular agenda during the public comment period may address matters under the jurisdiction of the board and not on the posted agenda. However, any person wishing to make a presentation must submit their issue in written form with copies furnished to board members. Presentations will be limited to 3 minutes. Board agenda items. Board agendas, minutes, and copies of items to be considered by the Board of Retirement are customarily posted on the internet by Friday afternoon preceding a meeting at the following website, www.stansara.org. Materials related to an item on this agenda submitted to the board after distribution of the agenda packet are available for public inspection at Stansara, 832 12th Street, where you're located now, and during normal business hours. Okay, I don't believe we have any non-English speakers today. So we'll go ahead and move on with the agenda. So roll call.
Okay, Marie DeAnda.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Mike Fisher.
Here.
Gordon Ford.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Linda Stoss Burnett.
Here.
Clarence Wilman.
Here.
Dale Korn.
Okay, the rotation of the officers. According to the bylaw, Article 1.5, I now have rotated to the chair position, and Ron is the vice chair. I'll try to be as absent as I possibly can.
As she walked out the door.
She's kidding, he isn't.
Okay, do we have any announcements?
Yes. Apparently there was some question or has been some issue regarding, I guess, the resolution adopted in connection with the Ventura case and the calculation of a vacation cash out at retirement. And to clarify things, Rick will be issuing a statement letter, including one I guess will come to Tom this week, specifying that I guess there used to be a 13-16 total hours, but that's going to be reduced by 84 hours, my calculation, so that's what, 232 hours. This has to do with the question of spiking?
Cashing out.
Mm-hmm. Cashing out. Okay. So AKA we'll wait for the letter, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any additional announcements? Any public comment? Okay. Quiet day. Consent items.
I make a motion to approve the consent items as stated.
A motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Yes, second. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, presentation of the 2000, is that a consent? Did I not scroll down far enough? Yeah, I should do it. Okay, did everybody get a chance to see the assignments to the committee? We try to minimize the amount of movement. Obviously, some couldn't be avoided, but if you have any questions, we can talk.
Okay, all board members received a copy of the correspondence from SLGS, the sector's administrator, which shows the deadlines and processes involved in the election of the sector's executive committee, the president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary positions that will occur in May at the sector's conference in May. The deadline for submitting nominations, et cetera, were all in that correspondence. Any questions?
Okay. Administrator.
Okay, we hope you've all brought your calendars for at least the March, April, and May of this year. We want to plan set aside three, four days to do our strategic planning sessions.
Normally, we have, one day?
Well, we have in the past done, in 2005, we used three, three times for strategic planning sessions, and then in full days, but there were two different times.
I wonder if I need a calendar.
For me, in March, that 15th, 20th is out, but other weeks are available.
May's a bad month for me, just so you know.
And in March, I've gone from the 10th through the 24th.
So you're back on the 25th?
Yes.
So we can look at the 25th through the 31st?
We're looking at three consecutive days or something.
They can be separate days if the board so chooses. It's best if we can get as many together as possible just for travel costs, expenses, and so on.
Are we going far?
For the facilitator.
Why?
Oh, facilitator.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
You come back the 24th, so you won't be available that day.
Right. I will not be available on the 24th.
But March?
Right.
Just us?
From the 10th to the 24th.
Cool.
And a facilitator. It's scary, yeah.
How does the 29th, 30th, and 31st work? That's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of March.
I'm gone 25th of March to the 16th of April.
What, are you taking a vacation or something?
No.
Did your boss approve it?
She made the reservations.
There's very few Tuesdays that I would ever be able to make a meeting.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say, with a board meeting, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
There are some, not too many. But not the 30th of April.
3 days.
What were the other two you mentioned?
Well, they were looking at 29th. Should be the second.
Mike, when do you get back?
16th of April.
So,
19. How long are these meetings going to be? Are these going to be like all day things, or like 4 hours, 3 hours?
We want you to set aside the whole day. Probably would be like 9 to 3. It would. You know, we wouldn't want to go, you know, a full 8 hours or 9 hours or anything like that. And it might be only a half day if the facilitator thinks they can, you know, get away with, 9 to 1 or something, like on the third day or something, kind of a wrap up that.
Good plan right there.
How about like the 28th, 29th, and 30th of April?
Again, it depends on what happens to the board. Supervisor meeting.
That's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Which one are you again?
April.
That was the wrong one?
30.
April. April. You're right. I got you. Sign.
Okay. Okay. Here in that May, we get into NCPers and Sackers.
Sackers.
Can we eliminate the first 2 weeks in March?
Yeah, I think so.
Three consecutive days.
That's hard.
We don't have to do three consecutive.
We don't have to.
It'd be easier if we could do it.
If you have to do 3 days, I guess April's better.
I am out the first week of March, but I think I'm back the second week.
And then that's when I leave the second week.
What about the 28th through the 30th of April? That's the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Who said that they were going to be out?
Ron's out.
And it may come down to the fact that we can't have 100% participation.
If we go into May, what happens? If you did May 5 through 7?
Got Sackers in May.
That's the first and Sackers in the first part.
Okay, can we go back to look at the last week of April, when Linda comes back, the 25th?
Well, that's from
I come right. back
But like I said, we may end up having to make some decisions. And I know Ron will miss us, but... April 26th? Maybe we could do every other day?
Yeah, because April 27th, I'm committed for that one day.
What Tom, you said somebody's coming in?
They're going to have a facilitator, right?
So they'd have to go back, come back and forth?
But if we can get one in Northern California, it won't be that expensive. I mean, if we get the guy from Canada, obviously, all 3 days.
But, every other day doesn't work too well for him.
Yeah, we're trying to find somebody in Northern California, San Francisco, Sacramento area.
Strategize.
28th, 29th, and 30th of April? That's a Wednesday, Thursday, and a Friday.
That's the one so we could be fine to deal with that.
I'm afraid we're already kind of trying.
Right, I can read the minutes.
Or if you wanted to do 2 days maybe in April and then maybe a follow-up towards the middle part of May after Sackers, after you get back from Sackers, and you have a wrap-up session in May. And then Ron can be part of that and have his input.
Does this tie anything that we have to complete by a certain time?
The goal was to get this done by the end of the fiscal year, but I mean...
I mean, is that just for our planning purposes, or is there anything that has to tie into anything else that we're doing?
Okay. Is Claudia Krosnick, she still works as a facilitator?
She retired. She was one of the 50.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that 50.
The paper.
No. Yeah, right. The ones we hid.
Yeah, the ones we hid.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Anyway, isn't she still... consulting on the side?
I don't know. I don't know if she would know.
Well, could we do Wednesday and Thursday of April, 28th and 29th, and then agree to meet back at the end of May, beginning of June? So maybe what we can do at that point is...
Maybe it'll be perfect 2 days and...
Maybe.
You know, we come back... I love your optimism. We come back married instead of divorced.
That's true. We can leave the third day as an option, either to come back and review what's been done, planned, whatever, and maybe that won't be a full day, except for Darren.
I'm flexible either way. No, it doesn't matter. The first part of May, I would be able to make it, but starting May 10th, all the way for about 4.5 weeks, I'll be unavailable.
Okay, so if no one has any problems with April 28th and 29th, let's go ahead and set those 2 dates, and we'll follow up later with the third date, if necessary.
Any motion in a second?
Somewhere.
That'll be here, though, right?
I don't know where it'll be.
My first choice is the Oakdale Golf and Country
Club. I mean, it'll be in the county.
In the county. Oh, it would definitely be in the county. Thank right,
you.
Right.
He puts it in Canada. We got a problem.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, a second. Okay, any further discussion?
It's just roughly the time period is, you said 9 to 3 or?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's close enough. I mean, it's right. Not going to go into the evening.
No, we wouldn't go into the evening.
My only question.
So, hey, hearing no opposition to that, then do we have a motion and a second? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved.
That would be good. Yeah, we can get those dates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, standing committee reports and recommendations. Standing committees, internal governments committee report.
I don't know that we have anything to report.
We have action on the fraud prevention policy.
Is that it?
The policy.
This is a policy that they think put together by gathering what was available. I don't even think from the county. I don't think they have.
No, they don't. They don't.
But from other sources. And it is fairly generic. Changes, suggestions.
This is applicable to the managers and staff.
Correct.
Yes.
Only that group. Have they seen the
This has been shared with the audit committee. Internal governance committee has audit committee has reviewed this. Our external auditors have reviewed it. This has not been shared with staff yet because it's not a final policy as adopted by the retirement board. That's what the board is doing here today, is to look at this as a final policy. But the main employees involved with functions, the accountant and the operations manager have reviewed this. This came out of the audit, the financial statements audit, as one of the management comments that we should have a fraud prevention policy in place. And that's what kind of started the ball rolling on it. Hank did some research on it, and again, it was passed. This was passed by both the council and also the external audit firm for review, and then the audit committee review.
Do we need an action to accept the policy?
Yes.
So we need a motion on this?
I'll make a motion that we accept the policy as stated.
Second.
Mike.
And Mike.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, ad hoc committees. Funding policy development. Mr. Lynch.
We met, I think Darren met first, we met a couple times on the excess earnings issue, and had some extensive conversations. And what you have in front of you is on item 10B, is a combination of the San Diego excess earnings policy with some provisions that our ad hoc committee thought should be included. And what it does essentially, and Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe some Darren could, is sets the excess earnings that once we are at 90% funding, then we have the authority, the board, to spend 25% of the excess earnings above 90% in the year for non-vested purposes, if we so determine. That's up to vote of the board. That only comes into play if the contra account has been eliminated. In other words, the big hole has got to have been filled. And then if the fund is at a higher level of funding, then we have a little bit more prerogatives for dispersal of the excess earnings, of what is deemed to be excess. And the summary of the of that is on page one, right on section four of your draft. So it doesn't do away with excess earnings or the allocation of excess earnings to purposes other than vested accounts, but it does make very clear that the hole that we are in has to be significantly improved before there are excess earnings. Is that a fair synopsis, Darren?
Yeah, this all came about as a way to put some clarity and some easy understood language with respect to our excess earnings into a policy format. So that's really what started this discussion. And as Mike stated, you know, I think it needs to be said that, you know, we understand that excess earnings may be there in the future, and there needs to be some discretion with respect to the board as to what we do with those excess earnings. But we have an obligation to make sure that any negative balances that are on the books are taken care of first and foremost for the vested guaranteed contractual benefits paid out through Stan-Sara.
I think that was done in the past, too, wasn't it? Whenever there were excess earnings, if there had been a low year, it went back and covered, brought it up to the day before any was...
Well, you always had a situation, my understanding is, you always had a situation within that fiscal year that if you made over your compounded assumption rate of 8.16%, you had a statutory obligation to, you know, fund the account, fund the reserves, all the mandated statutory requirements. But that did not, under that old policy, we could still have a negative contra account. Is that correct, Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But didn't we, before we allocated any money to any of the other ad hoc, weren't the other funds brought up to?
Mm-hmm. No.
No?
No. No, it wasn't. That wasn't the case. So that's basically, like I said, we're trying to put a policy in place that is a little more easily understood as to, you know, what we do with excess earnings if we get to the point where those again are a reality, obviously. But I think it just makes it cleaner. But it also says that if we do find ourselves in that situation and we have excess earnings, the board still has discretion to distribute those excess earnings once we've met our other obligation.
Now, you mentioned augmenting the contingency reserve. Does that mean you would bring it above the 2% or leave it at the 2%?
Well, I think, you know, with respect to the contingency reserve itself, we set that as a board policy, correct, Tom?
Right.
Yeah. So that's going to be separate from here. We can't go below a minimum of 1%, correct, Tom?
Right, too, in order to have the right hot benefits.
But we have ours set at 2% now, right?
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about augmenting it, are you talking about going above the 2% or not? Because I know you're saying because of market downturns, yes, it helps to have more than 2% in there.
That would be one of the options the board would have. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily they wouldn't have to do that, but it's one of their options.
At one point we had it at 3%.
Yeah.
At one point we had it at 10%.
10%.
Yes,
right.
Well, we had it at 3%. Yeah, we did. And then
there is talk about that again, though. So that's any other questions? Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't have any questions, but I have a few comments. I agree that we need to, you know, I think we should have a policy that says that all of our earnings should go excess earning, whatever you want to call them, over and above what we pay to. For our reserves, we should go into the contra account until that's zero. The rest of this, then what we do once we've And I actually think our contra account should be a little higher than 2% personally. Or, I mean, our contingency reserve should be higher than 2%. But once we've met those needs, once we've met that those requirements, I think the rest of these needs, I think, are never going to happen. So if we don't, you know, if the idea is not to ever have excess earnings, why have such a convoluted policy? Let's just say we don't want to have any excess earnings. I was looking back. Has our system ever met the requirements here for to do excess earnings? I couldn't tell that we ever have. We ever been 100% funded?
Over. It was 130%.
Yes, sure. In fact,
some of the assumptions might have been wrong, but
okay. Well, but I'm just saying. So I couldn't look.
Here, it has it right in here, and it does show the number of years that we. We're 100% in 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, and then 2003, it started going down 97.9, but enhanced benefits started going, were approved at that point in time, and you can see.
Well, and I think that's the issue, is what's going to happen, and what I think typically happens when a fund starts getting close to 100% is employee and employer organizations start getting together and they say, oh, well, look at how well this our retirement system doing. Let's increase benefits. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then, you know, the next year you're going to find that, oh, well, we're not 100% funded anymore because we've increased benefits or we've done whatever. We've lowered the amount that the employers or employees have to pay. And so we're back to, you know, what probably typically, you know, 85 to 95% funded, which is probably considered a healthy funding ratio for this type of retirement system. I think that's what you're going to end up, you're going to see typically where our funding's going to end up. And so we're never going to meet, you know, continually meet these kind of requirements. So I don't know why we need such a...
I think we need a policy that we can go by. I can tell you the county is not going to be increasing benefits. I can tell you that for sure. It will not happen. You know, we will.
Probably in 2000 they were saying that too, and then in 2003 they did. So
I think in the
who knows in 5 years what we're going to be doing.
Remember, I think you have to understand when you talk about benefits. You know, the county is the plan sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So if they decide they want to enhance benefits, ultimately, under the statute, they have that ability. So it's up to them to make sure when they look at the funding status of this fund, if they choose to do that, they need to make sure that the revenue streams they put in place based upon those enhanced benefits, the funding status of this system are in line to where we're not going to find ourselves in a situation such as you're describing. I think what this policy does is it says, look, if we're at 90% funding and you know all these other things have been met, we've got an excess earnings policy with respect to ad hoc benefits. Those issues have not gone away. So what we're trying to say is that we've met all these other obligations, we've got excess earnings, we're going to distribute them at a ratio, in this scenario that I've laid out, 25%. Okay, so we don't find ourselves in a situation where we've got a meltdown or whatever. What we're saying is our desired goal is to be at 90% funded or above. Absolutely,
well,
we may not find
that.
Ourselves
I
at that situation. That. Depending on the economy and market situations, but that's our desired goal before we find ourselves, you know, paying out, you know, $7.2 million a year when our funding status is such we can't afford to do that. So I think this is an easy thing to follow. Is excess earnings going to be around in the foreseeable future? Probably not. But if we find ourselves in a situation where they do come back, we've got a policy where if people come to us and say, why did you do X, we can show them a policy that says, well, here it is. We've got everything at zero. Our funding status is this. We found ourselves in a situation, so we're taking 25% and putting it over into the death benefit side of the house. you know, because that may be underfunded. Who knows? But it's just a policy that I think cleans things up so we don't find ourselves in a situation where we made 16+% and we take, and we've still got a negative contra balance, and we take $60 million and put it into to a ad hoc benefit account when our contra account is still at a negative. So
there is a roller coaster element to this, but we want to get to the roller coaster. I mean, we want the contra account to be eliminated. We want to be 90% plus funded, and we want to have the difficult decision of you have some excess earnings, how do you want to split them up? We want to go there, but we may not get there for a while. This is a framework for once we get there.
I hear what you're saying, Clarence.
Well, I just think it's a framework that's good. I mean, we're never going to get to, so, but that's fine. Yeah. I mean, I think we need a framework also. And I also, like I said, I agree that we need to clean up our contra account before we start thinking of having any excess earnings.
I agree with that 100%.
So, and I don't think doors should be shut because of what happens now when in the past we've had relatively good years. And going forward, at least I hope we've learned our lessons.
I think the only thing,
conferred part of it, though, that is really what ended up happening. It was the retirement board, correct me if I'm wrong, was really not a part of any of the last decision to enhance benefits.
Well, yeah, that's not our decision, but that exactly. affected what.
But we could certainly recommend that in future meeting confers that we would certainly hope that the prudent man rule applies to both the Board of Supervisors and the unions.
And then probably my only question was under four. A and B, when we say funding, this is really the only place we're not specific, where it says funding, it says, you know, the earnings will be used for funding a pension liability. Are we talking about then earnings are going to go into the retired member's pension reserve? Is that what you guys mean there?
It would go into the vested accounts, right. Good.
But which, right. are they going to, well... Then which vested accounts are they going to go to? Are they going to go equally into all the vested accounts, or are they going to go into...
Actuarially, it doesn't matter, only because the actuary just says, what are your assets, and then they smooth the asset value, and they don't look at, there's so much in members' contribution, there's so much in employer advance, there's so much in retiree, they don't even look at the reserve accounts. So.
So what, Tom, what do we need to do? We need to...
What would happen is you're going to adopt, if the board so chooses, to adopt this as proposed language, which would then go to RESCO for their input. I think the committee is agreeable to have RESCO have until April 30th, 2010, to then have a written response back to the policy, because this does deal with excess earnings, and Government Code Section 3592.5 states that the retired organization shall have input in any changes to excess earnings or how they're handled. This would allow time for RESCO to have their luncheon in March to get feedback from members, and also for the board to meet and prepare a written response to the board. And then this can come back in May for the board's final decision.
So the first motion is not to adopt it, but to
adopt as proposed. As proposed. Proposed language, right?
And to send it to RESCO for
comment. Send it to RESCO.
Would anybody like to make the motion?
I'll make the motion.
We have a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved. Send it to RESCO. Okay, that takes us to closed session.
Madam Chairman, I make a motion that we move into closed session.
Second.
You seconded it, I'm sorry?
Mike?
Mike.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we're on closed session.
Stretch time.
Okay. In closed session, the retirement board accepted the hearing officer's recommendation on the Dennis Crown application for service-connected disability to deny those benefits.
Okay. That's all the report out of closed session. Now we go on to members forum. So we're going to start with you, Ron.
Nothing today.
Not so lucky. Okay.
Real quick, Ron and I just got back a rather arduous return from Arizona. And contrary to what you might think, there were some very cold days down there. But what we did learn is basically what we've all seen. I'll wrap this up, don't worry. That the market has changed considerably in the last couple of years. It is not going to be the same market investment-wise moving forward. There were a number of people down there. The dynamics kind of changed a little bit. You know, you're getting some people trying to sell their product. But if you filter through all that, there are some opportunities out there to be had that you're not, that are still not to the point of you're putting so much risk or skin in the game, so to speak. Tom, if you would ask Paul Hart to look into the issue of investing in the asset class of life settlements, and if you anybody has seen articles on that, it's basically an asset class that's been created for people that own life insurance policies. You have a legal right under a U.S. Supreme Court decision many, many years ago that you own that policy. You can sell that policy to a life settlement broker, and depending on the factors involved, you get you can get cash up front for the policy, or you can get paid out an annuity, and so there are opportunities in that asset class to take advantage of. I know it
sounds morbid.
It is.
Life insurance and all the people having their house foreclosed.
That's how a lot of people took it. But I think if you look at it from the opportunity that if you have someone that's been, depending on the policy, that has been paying on this policy for 40 years and is still paying on it, and they need cash up front or in the form of an annuity, they need monthly streams of revenue as a benefit, there are advantages to doing that. And there are three reputable firms out there that are doing it, are well respected. We had one snake oil salesman at the conference that was quite humorous. So if you'll get him to look into that, and also I know we've asked him to do this before, but Ron, you think any of any other ideas that we walked away from?
I think one of the things that was interesting is, we've gone away from commercial real estate. A lot of so-called experts are calling the bottom on commercial real estate. Maybe a time for us to think about stepping in here within the next 6 months, if we see that going. On the life settlement, it was kind of interesting because they take all these life policies and then pool them together based on mortality tables so that you start getting payouts with them immediately.
Days.
Or very, yeah. But they were talking, and we'll have to wait and see, but roughly a 10% return on it. With your risks being that people live longer than the mortality tables, because then you eat up the premium and lower the rate of return. But I think they're pretty exciting for us because we're in the reverse side of that. We're looking for that annuity stream, and if we can get it pretty much guaranteed, it better than we can get with a risk investment that has greater potential for principal loss.
Have they developed tranches by category so that you can buy life policies on bankers? So the ones that jump out of the window, you can click.
Yeah, smokers, non-smokers.
I saw that this morning. It doesn't look like they're jumping on anyone.
Ah, duck cut.
See what I'm
But any other, the interesting thing is that three very good speakers showed what to expect going forward. And the message out of that was if your 60% equity, 40% bonds, which is what we were, and basically we're still pretty close to that, going forward you're going to get beat up pretty bad. Now, obviously, no one has a crystal ball. But the idea that you're going to be able to just have that kind of allocation and stay the course and think you're going to get a fairly healthy return going forward is you're pretty much living in dreamland. I mean, we had all sorts. They had investment opportunities, which with the second largest ag business firm in the United States that's been around for over 100 years. That they have an asset class where you can invest in ag properties in Brazil, because that's a very huge market now. Is Brazil? I mean, we could have Fred go down and represent us because that's Portuguese. So
now that the timber land in the Amazon,
we thought about bringing you back a little pine tree timber.
It's pretty interesting because the guy did a very good presentation, because the biggest fear everybody has is they're clearing the rainforest.
Right.
And Brazil is very progressive in the sense that they have protected those. And for any that impinges upon those rainforests, you have to set aside and plant additional rainforests elsewhere. So it's kind of like our wetlands issues that we have here in real estate.
Yeah.
But actually, he was showing the amount of plantable land. They can grow three crops a year. They're just some major issues, and his belief, and his company's been doing it for many years, is that they'll surpass the United States as the breadbasket of the world. So, there are all kinds of things that we can look at, back to basic things like timber, and that are pretty stable and pretty much guaranteed returns. And I think we need to open our scope a little bit here as we move forward.
Well, and I've said this before, and I'll wrap it up and just say this, is I think from a fiduciary standpoint, if we don't, nothing says we have to, but the problem we're going to have moving forward is if we don't look at these and other people are doing it and there's, not that much risk in the game. Obviously, we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket. And so I think the county as the plan sponsor or a retiree group, let's say, could bring a suit like this. Your fund is down, i.e. the county is saying to us, you're costing us more and more every year. We've benchmarked other systems your size and they're earning 10-12%. And you're still stuck in a 60-40 asset allocation of equities and bonds, and you're costing us more and more every year because you're not changing your way of doing business. So I think we have to educate ourselves, and I would like to see more board members start going to some of these conferences and just educating yourself and again emphasizing, doesn't mean we're going to do it. Nothing's a guarantee that you're gonna jump into this stuff, but I think we have to look at it as a potential future opportunity.
That's one all. Last point on what Darren was saying: most of the panels consist of two or three trustees and two or three investment people, so that there was a good mix on any of these topics. But the most interesting one was the state of Texas retirement system. One of the trustees was a cowboy sheriff out of Austin or somewhere. Great speaker, very funny. But that fund is 61% alternative investments. It has been for 12, 13 years, he said. They've been one of the leaders. They have ranked for the last 15 years as one of the top three in total return in the United States of all.
What is it, Blackwater? Is it?
They changed their name.
Well, and I'll just throw this last comment out. Think about it. They had a most recent economic report of the Council of Economic Advisors or something like that that said that the average funding ratio for all public pension systems throughout the United States is roughly about 34% funding. Now, exactly, all of a sudden you think, 34%, wait a minute. So I went up afterwards and I asked the guy, I'm still trying to find the report, but I said, is that the pension side of it, or are you taking in the health insurance side of the OPEB response, the obligations? And that's what it is.
It's combined.
It's combined. And so that makes sense when you look at, you know,
CalPERS
has got a $70 billion unfunded liability. City of Modesto has about a $70 to $80 million unfunded liability. So when you factor that in, it makes sense. So, you realize that our system or our plan sponsor doesn't have that exposure.
Yep.
So count themselves lucky. That's all I have now.
Okay, I'm going to go back a little bit to Harvey. You said you had something?
Oh, I was just going to offer you a comment on the life settlement thing. The thing about the life settlement, I mean, the only thing, I don't know, that it has going for it is that it's an asset. You call it an asset class, but it's an asset that is totally non-correlated with any other asset in a portfolio. It is totally independently. I mean, that's what we saw in this last year. We saw everything was correlated. You know, they told us nothing would be, you know, we should invest, you know, in diversified assets because it wouldn't be correlated, and it turned out that everything was correlated.
It's hard.
This is one asset that is not correlated to anything.
Hard to believe. I would think you would have more deaths during bad economy than good.
It doesn't happen that way.
Only on the investor side.
So we would be four deaths.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd be betting that people die sooner than later.
Make
money on
death. For you anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
An actuarial game when someone dies early.
Yeah, business.
Actuarial liability if they live too long.
If we do this, let's try to keep the humor to a minimum. No, I'm serious. Because they did a survey when these things were starting to come out, and they surveyed people that didn't know about it, were thinking about getting into it, and one of the common comments that people were making was, well, if I did this, if I sold my life insurance policy, the only way they can make money is if they sent somebody to my house and killed me. I mean, people actually thought that through and said, well, if I sell somebody my policy and the only way they're going to make money on me is, so yeah, it's a business decision. Let's try and keep the morbid stuff off the table.
It's not the Obama death squad.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Could come.
Yeah. Because that's what, you know.
The insurance company does anyway.
We could fund the government.
Hey, taking a bet on your
we're network. Doing, as Ron pointed out, and they made this comment. They said, you know, we're doing the same thing. You know, somebody enters, it's age of entry into the system. And it's based upon a mortality table.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we're basically in the same line of business.
We're good at it. Yep.
So there you go.
The other interesting thing on these is they're not your mom's and pop's insurance policies. Most of them are medium-sized businesses that are run by one or two people. Usually have key man life insurance, and that's required by the financing entity. When they sell those businesses, they have this big life insurance policy, which they don't need because they've cashed out of their business. That's where they're buying these policies. So that's a big chunk of all, not the little old ladies that are.
Thank you. Okay, Mike.
I just have a few pages here.
Can you follow?
No. Happy New Year.
I just want to let you guys know that the CalPERS Principles of Pension Management is happening again in March. Most of you have taken it, but it's a good refresher course. If you want to go, let me know before the end of February.
Nothing for me.
Okay. Then I think nothing for me. So that wraps us up.